Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Finding Hope by Elizabeth Johns, narrated by Alex Windham. Chapter 1. Hope Whitford had watched that morning as her elder sister, Faith, had married Dominic Lord Westwood, their guardian, and not without a little trepidation. Nothing would change, they said, but Hope was sceptical. She now sat at a table littered with the remnants of the wedding breakfast, watching as Dominic danced with Faith, the two of them looking as though nothing or no one else existed in the world. Hope could not suppress some jealousy towards Lord Westwood. She was not proud of this emotion, but it was difficult to think of Faith as anything other than her motherly elder sister and best friend. She had not even wanted to come to London, and had had no thoughts of getting married, yet she had made the match of the season. It was not that Hope wasn't pleased for her sister, but she did not want everything to change. But how could it not? She looked around the ballroom, which no longer resembled the heavens, as it had only a few weeks before at her and her sister's debut ball. Instead, it looked like a rose garden, with tables for dining and room for dancing. Mr. Cunningham was doting on Joy and Freddy Tiger, as the beloved rescued cat was taking turns jumping from her lap to his. Hope laughed as she thought of the cat's performance during the ceremony, when he'd leaped from Joy's pocket to pounce on Faith's train as it had snaked along behind her. The congregation had not been able to contain their laughter. Patience was surrounded by her court of gentlemen in regimentals. They all looked the same to Hope, except for Major Stuart. He, at least with his fair features, resembled his brother Lord Westwood enough that she recognized him. Lord Montfort, another of Lord Westwood's close friends, was holding out his hand, clearly asking Grace to dance. Hope stamped at her confit de canard with her fork, chewing it without tasting it, then took a long swallow of her champagne. "May I join you?" Lord Carew, also one of Westwood's friends, asked, as he slid into the seat beside her before she could answer. "You look as though you are in mourning rather than celebrating." Hope tried not to watch as Lord Rotham twirled the beautiful Vivian Cunningham around the room. She was Freddy, Mr. Cunningham's younger sister, and every bit as beautiful. With her blonde curls, she was the complete opposite of Hope, and looked ethereal next to Rotham's dangerous dark looks. "Would it help if we danced?" Carew asked, as if reading her thoughts.
"I doubt it. Which sister will be next, do you think?"
the dowager asked the now dowager Lady Westwood none too quietly. At least from where Hope sat, it seemed as though she was almost shouting.
"It is hard to say. All of them have plenty of suitors."
Hope heard a harumph.
"Better catch Rotham for the next one."
Her ears pricked at the name.
"He will have to want to be caught. I'm not certain that will happen any time soon." "Balderdash! He will want what his friends have, mark my words."
Hope frowned at that. What a lowering thought, to be wanted only for such a reason. "Come, you need to dance." Carew held out his hand to her, and she accepted it, meeting his twinkling blue eyes.
"Perhaps you are right.
My attentions to your sister seem to get Westwood's notice. Maybe Rotham will wake up and notice the prize before him as well." As she was swept into his arms, Hope thought perhaps she had fallen for the wrong man.
"Smile, dearest,"
Lord Carew said as they danced. "Nothing will get Rotham's attention more than seeing you enjoying another man's arms."
"Forgive me,"
Hope said.
"I must be a terrible partner."
"Not at all," he said graciously.
"Why are you doing this for me?"
"It would amuse me to see Rotham brought to heel."
"Did it amuse you to do the same to Westwood?"
He smiled devilishly.
"Indeed it did."
He was remarkably handsome. Why could she not be in love with him? But Grace, her younger sister, was very much enamored of the Irish rogue, and Hope did not wish to hurt her.
"Were you insincere in your offer for Faith, then?"
she asked.
"Not insincere, no, but I knew it would have the desired effect."
"Gentlemen are odd creatures,"
she replied.
"Men feel the same way about the fair sex. It keeps things interesting."
Hope allowed her gaze to slide to Rotham and Miss Cunningham.
"I would not do that if I were you," he cautioned.
"Why not?"
Hope asked, though she knew she should keep her eyes on her partner.
"What is the harm in looking?"
He shook his head sadly.
"You have much to learn, Mastor."
Hope bristled to defend herself.
"It is human nature to want what you cannot have. Do you not agree?" he asked.
"So you are saying if he thinks he cannot have me, then he will want me?"
"Precisely."
She shook her head.
"And you say you are not all creatures?"
Smile, my dear. He's looking this way.
Hope smiled her biggest smile and laughed. Lord Carew touched a finger to her cheek and boldly caressed it.
What are you doing?
She asked through the smile, which was so wide it almost hurt.
Trust me.
Making me look like a hussy is your idea of making him jealous.
Lord Carew laughed and bowed as the dance ended. He held out his arm to her, then escorted her from the floor. Hope could not help but see Lord Rotham and Miss Cunningham speaking with his mother, the Duchess.
It is no secret Miss Cunningham is the Duchess's choice for Rotham,
Carew said quietly in her ear.
They had been intended for each other from a young age, though nothing was made formal, I understand.
How am I to compete with that?
She asked, as much to herself as to him.
You don't, he said.
I don't understand.
It is not you versus Miss Cunningham, he explained. That is the wrong way to look at it, and will only bring animosity between you.
So I am to befriend her?
She asked skeptically.
If you must, but at least do not hold this against her. She may not wish for the match herself. Regardless of any affection they may feel, men do not enjoy caddish females with petty, bitter tendencies.
I cannot say I enjoy them myself, she muttered.
Instead of returning her to the table, Lord Carew kept walking.
Where are you taking me?
Have you had the privilege of being introduced to the Duchess?
No, but now is not the time.
Hope tried to resist and pull back.
Nonsense. No time like the present.
Hope suspected Carew had his own reasons for doing this to her, but Rotham had seen them coming, and it was too late to draw back. He looked as darkly handsome as ever, and Hope prayed that her reaction to him was not outwardly obvious. She still clung to Lord Carew's arm and hoped she wasn't bruising him. Hope noticed the Duchess stop her conversation and look Hope over from head to toe with pursed lips and a disapproving gleam in her eye. She was probably in her mid-40s and striking, or would have been were she not looking so censorious.
Carew, Miss Whitford.
Rotham bowed.
Mother, have you had the privilege of meeting Miss Whitford?
I have not,
she replied tartly, in a tone that said she would rather not ever have that privilege.
Mother, sister, this is Miss Whitford. Miss Whitford, this is my mother, the Duchess of Davenmere, and my younger sister, Lady Claudia.
Hope curtsied, but deliberately not low enough for royalty. She would not toady to one who felt her consequence so strongly. The Duchess was not tall, but her presence was all intimidation. Hope barely noticed Lady Claudia beside the wrathful stare of the mother.
Are you acquainted with Miss Cunningham? She has been Rotham's intended from the cradle,
the Duchess returned. Hope smiled her sweetest smile and curtsied to the beautiful girl.
It is a pleasure, Miss Cunningham, she said.
She returned the courtesy, which made Hope like her a little, even against her wishes. It was hard to hate someone who was kind. Perhaps Carew was correct that Miss Cunningham was not the enemy.
You are new in town, are you not?
She asked in a soft, angelic voice.
My brother has mentioned you and your sisters. Yes, we lived a secluded life near Bath with Lady Halbury until Lord Westwood became our guardian. I believe my brother invited you to our garden party. I do hope you will attend. How very kind. I will consult with the Dowager. I do believe my sister and her husband are preparing to say farewell, if you'll excuse me.
Hope began to pull away, but Carew stayed with her as she walked away.
The Duchess has thrown down the gauntlet, has she not?
Rotham will now be pleased.
He is a grown man. If he chooses to allow his mother to lead him around by the nose, that is his choice.
She is a dragon,
Carew agreed good-naturedly.
Miss Cunningham is so lovely.
So lovely that it hurt Hope to compare herself to the young lady. Rotham sees her as a sister.
Hope stopped.
It matters not. I am resolved not to wear my heart on my sleeve.
Good girl,
Carew said with an approving smile.
Hope only wished she felt as resolved in her heart as in her mind.
Max watched Miss Whitford walk away on Carew's arm, and it was difficult not to go after her. A strange sensation of jealousy pulsed through his veins, but he dared not show any hints of affection lest his mother try to destroy Miss Whitford. He had no right to monopolize her, and at this point he was not ready to acknowledge more than a genteel friendship.
The Duchess was ruthless in trying to get her way, as witnessed by the announcement she had just made. I will call on you to discuss this in the morning, Your Grace. Miss Cunningham.
He made a curt bow to both of them, then left the wedding breakfast.
What he hated the most was that Vivian was caught between he and his mother.
Max had been brought up by the Duchess and knew she would do anything to have her way, Vivian knew his family, but not the lengths his mother would go to, either to be right or get what she wanted. Her determination had come between them more than once, and Max refused to let her run his life, nor make such monumental decisions for him. Max dismissed his carriage and walked home. Part of him hoped he would be set upon by footpads because he was itching for a fight. It was not even dark yet when he left, though he scarcely noticed his surroundings. He did not go to one of his clubs that night, but passed them without going inside. Instead of returning home, he walked and walked, considering the matter. Besides being 12 years his junior, Vivian was like a little sister to him, and he could no more consider marrying her than his own flesh and blood. Thankfully, Vivian understood and professed to feel the same. However, his mother saying such things in public would only harm Vivian. He must, would, put a stop to her madness once and for all. Unfortunately, short of matricide, the only way to stop her from spreading the falsehood was to marry someone else. He no more wanted to be forced into marriage than to marry Vivian, or allow his mother to have her way. It was difficult to honour thy mother when she was behaving dishonourably. Max could not even say how long he wandered the streets, but he did eventually find himself back at his townhouse. The next morning, he had had time to calm himself, and he dressed whilst mentally preparing for battle. To what lengths would he have to go to see his mother surrender? He donned his beaver hat and took his walking stick from Baxter, then proceeded across Grosvenor Square to his parents' house, his future residence. His father stayed buried in the country unless he had to come to London, but would he trouble himself to rein in the Duchess if Max asked? Max shook his head, answering his own question. He was a grown man and had to deal with this himself. The door opened before he could knock. "Good morning, my lord," Evans said, and held out his hand for Max's hat and walking stick. "Evans?" Max acknowledged a long-time family retainer. "Where is Her Grace?"
"I believe she is still in her chambers, my lord. Her maid sent down word that she was abed with the headache."
"I will show myself out then," he said before Evans could protest.
Her Grace did not care to be disturbed in her chambers, but Max knew this was one of her tricks to fob him off. She knew full well he would be there this morning and was trying to disconcert him. It would not work. He climbed the stairs with deliberate patience, forcing himself to be calm, then knocked on the door to her sitting room. He did not care to find her in dishabille, after all.
"Enter,"
she called, very lightly expecting a servant. He opened the door and found her fully dressed, sitting near the window.
"Rotham,"
she greeted him coolly.
"Your Grace?"
He walked forward and kissed her on the cheek to discompose her.
"You are looking well?"
"I have an announcement en route to the papers. Vivian and her parents have agreed it is for the best to make things formal."
Max sat down and slowly crossed his legs. He had anticipated something as base as this. He could relate somewhat to Westwood's fury when Sir Julian had made such an announcement about Westwood's wife, except now it was his own mother trying to force his hand publicly.
"Have you nothing to say?"
she demanded.
"I think it is unfortunate that you felt you had the power to do such a thing. I've already made it clear to the papers that any such announcement, unless delivered personally by me, is not to be printed, or such publication will result in serious consequences for them." She drew in a gasp with anger. "I will not be forced into marrying Miss Cunningham or anyone else, Your Grace."
"You intend to be entrapped by that vulgar Whitford girl?"
"No one will entrap me, including you. I will marry whom I want, when I want."
"But this has been arranged for years,"
she argued. "There is nothing binding, and you know it. Vivian and I never agreed to such an arrangement. Besides, if that were the case, you would not have invited half a dozen ladies to your house party."
"A house party that you promised to be at, and rather than honour that obligation, you went hunting instead."
"I made no promises."
"How can you be so unfeeling?"
His mother's voice shook with anger.
"I could ask the same of you."
"You were brought up to be a dutiful son. You cannot marry whomever you wish, like your friends do. You must honour your name and title."
"I have no intention of besmirching the dukedom with a guttersnipe, Your Grace."
"Yet you hang in the pocket of one. Do you think I do not see your name associated with hers in the papers every day?"
"Miss Whitford is a lady."
"She is gentry at best."
"I will not argue this, Your Grace."
"Vivian has everything you could ever want. Birth, fortune, looks. She is a diamond of the first water."
"She is as a sister to me."
"You have raised expectations in her breast, as well as her parents and yours."
"My father has no opinion on the matter whatsoever. This is solely your doing."
"There you are wrong."
She pushed a letter across the table towards him, and Max recognized his father's script and seal. Max picked it up and tossed it into the fire.
"You have bullied him into proclaiming his deepest wish for the Union, have you not? It will not work."
"Then you will be cut off."
"So be it. I cannot be removed as heir. I can survive until then."
He stood and made her a bow. It would give her no reason to disclaim him a gentleman, at least.
"You will regret this,"
she called after him. Once he was out of sight of Davenmere House, Max increased his pace. He yelled for his secretary the moment he was through the door.
"Johnson, the Duchess has been busy. Hand deliver a notice to all the papers at once. No announcements are to be published unless at my expressed wish."
The nerve of his mother. She was correct in one thing, though. Vivian was beautiful, but in a girlish, innocent sort of way. Miss Whitford's deep blue eyes flashed fire and held promise of hidden depths that were yet to be explored. Chapter 2 Hope dressed for the Cunningham garden party in a subdued morning gown of jonquil muslin adorned with tiny embroidered daisies. She paired it with a straw bonnet, with a white ribbon and daisies to match. She was determined to think of Miss Cunningham as Freddy's sister, and not Rotham's intended. Hope adored Freddy Cunningham, so why not his sister?
"You look plucked straight from a meadow,"
Joy teased. She was the only one waiting in their sitting room. Little Freddy Tiger was no longer so little, and was currently attacking the tassels on one of the sofa pillows.
"Stop that, Freddy,"
Joy scolded as she picked him up and moved him.
"It is a garden party,"
Hope retorted.
"You are certain you do not wish to go. The invitation expressly included you. I am certain that was Mr. Cunningham's doing, but I do not think I feel up to watching everybody else be gay and playing games and not be able to participate. Shall I stay here with you? I do not mind. Miss Hillier has promised to finish reading Evelina to me, and Westwood Chef has promised to make me some jam tarts."
Hope shook her head.
"Very well. But you must assure me you will take some fresh air. I do not think it is healthy to stay inside all the time." "Easily done. I'm good about taking Freddy out myself."
Patience and Grace came into the room, wearing rose and green muslin respectively.
"Shall we go?"
Patience asked.
"The Dowager will be waiting for us."
They did not have far to go. The Cunninghams' townhouse abutted the Green Park, and tents and tables had been set up, along with several lawn games, from tennis to lawn bowls for those who wished for amusement. The formal garden was lined with yew trees that had been shaped into ovals, surrounding a large fountain as the centerpiece. Flowering hedges formed the outer boundaries, with plane and oak trees for shade, while blooms of lavender and rose filled the air with their perfume. Their bright colours danced gaily before the sombre green of the hedge. Hope was trying to put a sunny smile on her face, but she felt only melancholy. Her best friend and sister was married and gone, and Rotham, whose friendship she had taken for granted when he was escorting her everywhere for her safety, now appeared to be unattainable. Why had he never mentioned he was already betrothed? Not only had she lost a friend, she had also foolishly allowed herself to become enamoured with him. Had his seeming interest in her only been feigned, or due to proximity?
"Welcome,"
Freddy Cunningham said warmly when he saw them arrive.
"Did Miss Joy not come?"
He looked and sounded disappointed.
"I'm afraid not. She thought seeing everyone else enjoying themselves would be too much temptation."
"And I thought she would enjoy the sunshine and the company."
He frowned.
"Perhaps it is too soon. Besides, Westwood Chef promised her some pastries, and the governess was to entertain her with some letters of Francis Burney."
"I pray that is all it is. Have you met my sister?"
"I have had the pleasure,"
Hope replied, turning to the young lady who had joined them.
"How do you do? I'm so glad you could join us, Miss Whitford,"
she said with a kind smile.
"We were pleased to come. Your home and garden are lovely."
Mr. Cunningham introduced his sister to Patience and Grace, with whom she was of an age. They seemed to take to each other immediately and began giggling about something. Hope began to feel ancient, and wondered if she'd ever been that young. Miss Cunningham seemed so very young and innocent, the very opposite of Lord Rotham. He would eat her alive or be bored to tears by her. He needed someone who could keep his interest. Yet that was not to be Hope. It chafed that she was not thought to be good enough for the likes of a future duke, but that was the way of the world, and she did not wish to be the cause of any strife or viewed as an object of disdain by his family. Hope had always borne this strong need to be liked. Perhaps it came with being the second child and one of many siblings, yet she did not detect this weakness in any of her sisters. It was hard not to think about what Lord Carew had said about wanting what was unattainable. She certainly felt that effect on herself. However, she had to behave indifferently for her own protection. What was the distinction between indifference and coldness, though? After he'd protected her and been her friend, she owed Rotham better than that. She'd heard some say that men and women could not be just friends. It was not always true, certainly, but it could be more difficult. Hope knew the moment he arrived. The hairs on her arms and neck seemed to prickle with awareness. Instead of looking for him, she searched for Lord Carew, who, when her eyes met his, smiled at her with amusement. He began walking towards her. "Do you have need of me, Miss Whitford?" She put her chin up in the air, offended that she had been called out.
"I did no such thing, but now that you are here, you can be useful."
"At your service, of course. Are we pretending indifference?" She tilted her head and pursed her lips.
"I was trying to decide how to accomplish indifference while remaining friendly. Is such a thing possible? He did do me and my sisters a great service. All of you did."
He inclined his head. "I do not think you need to be uncivil or cold, but do not go out of your way. Make him come to you."
"But how do I behave when I am with him?"
"Treat him like you treat me, although you should not pretend to be indifferent with me," he added.
"This is terribly confusing. I do not think I can do it. Besides, what is the point if he has promised to someone else?"
she asked, as much to herself as to Carew. "Smile, my dear. He's walking this way." Hope immediately felt very conscious of Rotham's presence and their changed situation. For once she did not know how to act. It was distinctly uncomfortable to know that his friendship and proximity were no longer hers to command. Just as he reached them, Hope saw the Duchess watching from across the garden, and that made her spine stiffen. She greeted Rotham with more coolness than she had intended. "Carew, Miss Whitford," he said with an easy smile. Rotham was looking more dark and dangerous than usual, which only made Hope want him more. But she knew better than to throw herself at his feet. She would not demean herself so, especially in front of the Duchess.
"Lord Rotham,"
she inclined her head. Should it be a small comfort that he had greeted her before Miss Cunningham? A waiter walked by with glasses of punch and champagne, and Rotham took one and offered it to her.
"Thank you,"
she muttered as she accepted it, but could think of nothing else to say. "Have you heard from Westwood and your sister?"
"Yes, my lord. They have arrived in Paris and are enjoying the cuisine and shops."
At her side, Carew snorted. "I'll bet." Hope did not understand the sardonic tone. Perhaps he was more affected than he let on that Faith had chosen Westwood. She sipped on her punch to give her something to do besides talk. Hope didn't want to hang on Rotham's sleeve, or Carew's, for that matter. She also did not wish to go another season unwed, which meant she had to make the effort to attract other suitors. All those dreams and fantasies she'd had about having a season were nothing like the reality. For all she knew, Rotham was as high in the instep as his mother and had only been doing her a kindness. Had she so wildly mistaken his interest? It did not matter if his marriage to Miss Cunningham was already planned. He certainly had not denied the Duchess's announcement of that fact. She was unaccountably hurt when there was no understanding between Lord Rotham and herself. She had stupidly allowed herself to become infatuated with him, and the only way to cure that was to distance herself.
"Would you excuse me?"
She broke away from the gentleman, needing to be away from him. Whenever Rotham was near, she could think of no one else. Patience and Grace were still speaking with Miss Cunningham, and Hope made her way towards them. The alternative was to go to the Dowager Lady Westwood, but she was with the Duchess of Davenmere. Hope stood on the periphery as her sisters and Miss Cunningham were discussing some of their mutual army friends and their regiment's movements to the country for the summer, causing general woe amongst the eligible misses who relied upon the soldiers for dancing and frivolity. Hope had drunk her punch too quickly and excused herself to find the ladies' retiring room, but halted behind a clematis-covered column when she overheard the Duchess talking to Faith's mamma-in-law.
"They're all passably well-looking, I'll grant you, but I pity you for being taken in, Louisa. They are nothing but commoners looking to better themselves. I would have expected no less from Florence Halbury. Westwood should have sent them right back where they came from with a hired companion to see them suitably placed. To foist them on you to bring out is unforgivable."
Every syllable from her lips dripped with disdain.
"Westwood did so with my blessing, Your Grace. Faith is now my daughter, and I could not be more pleased with her. The other girls are equally a delight to me. I enjoy squiring them around immensely."
The Duchess humphed doubtfully.
"I suppose there is nothing to be done but keep them away from Rotham."
Enough was enough. Max attended the Cunningham Garden party and decided he could not take anything more. He had noticed how Miss Whitford had distanced herself from him every time he'd come near. Curse his mother for ever saying anything about Vivian. He had to get away to think, and it seemed to be as good a time as any to visit his father, the Duke. If he was truly to be cut off, then it was time they came to an understanding. It was hard to imagine his father ever doing such a thing. It said much about the state of his familial relations that Max rarely went to the ducal seat, but he'd been brought up much like an automaton, without love or affection, save from old family retainers, such as the nurse and the head groom, with whom he had spent most of his time until he went away to school. Then he'd relished the camaraderie of his friends, whom he was still close to. His mother had been born and bred to be a duchess, and she thought of nothing but duty and connections. He had seen her twice a year as a child, and even then he'd only been brought out for her inspection. His father, on the other hand, was not a stern creature, but allowed himself to be swayed and directed by the duchess and his steward. He made time for Max when requested, but would much rather be with his hounds and horses than people. Knowing the duchess was in London, Max directed his valet to pack for a fortnight in Derbyshire. The ride and distance from the Duchess and females of marriageable age would be most welcome. A long, hard 2 days' ride eased some of his anger with his mother. City had turned into countryside. Then, as he'd neared Ashbourne, the gentle climb towards the peaks alleviated the rest. As he approached Davenmere from the village, he felt detached, even though he'd grown up there and knew it would one day be his. He knew he needed to marry to carry on the ducal line. He might not be attached to the house, but even he had pride in the family name. As he thought, surveying the pride of the ducal name, he wanted what his mother looked down her aquiline nose at. He wanted to fill the estate with warmth and laughter and affection, a wife, children. Then he might feel what he ought. When he thought of who he could share that with, it was not Vivian Cunningham's innocent blue eyes and angelic face that came to mind. One thing he could say for her was that she was not cold. However, she did not warm his blood as Hope Whitford did. Yet would it be fair to Miss Whitford to ask her to be his duchess? It was not an easy task, especially when one had not been brought up to it, and it was a very public position. Max cared little for that, but he could not shield her from it entirely. But he didn't want to think about marriage at the moment. His mother had put such a distasteful flavour for it into his mouth, and he feared it would throw a dark cloud over any arrangement he wished to make that was not with Vivian Cunningham. The Duchess had proved her ruthlessness time and time again, and with this latest stunt of trying to announce the betrothal, he feared his ability to properly court anyone else would be doomed to failure. He urged Romulus forward down the hill to the stables, and left the large bay gelding with the grooms.
"My lord!"
Guildford exclaimed with unaccustomed surprise as Max entered the house.
"We were not expecting you."
"Am I unwelcome, then?"
Max was taken aback.
"Of course not, my lord. I will have everything ready for you."
"Where is my father? I did not see him in the stables or the kennel."
"I believe he is resting in his chambers, my lord."
Max frowned. When had his father ever rested in the afternoon? He turned away and walked toward the stairs that led to the family apartments. He climbed slowly and thoughtfully up the plush burgundy carpets and past the walls lined with portraits of pompous-looking ancestors wearing their court regalia. The place was quiet as a mausoleum, with a distinct lack of warmth. When he reached the end of the upper hallway and the two large wooden doors with the Davenmere crest intricately carved into the panels, Max decided not to knock. If his father was asleep, he would rather not wake him. The door swung open quietly to the sitting room, and he waited whilst his eyes adjusted to the dim light. It did not smell of soap and beeswax like the rest of the house. It smelled of the sick room. He saw his father's frame covered in blankets, sitting in an armchair by the fire. What the devil? Max moved quietly into the room to see if he was asleep. His generally large, boisterous father looked like a shell of himself. He was thin and frail. He turned his head and opened his eyes.
"Max?"
he asked weakly.
"Yes, father, it is I."
"Thank you for coming. I was afraid you wouldn't read my letter."
"Letter?" he thought.
"Your mother wanted me to demand you marry the Cunningham chit, of course, but I let her think that was what I wrote."
He chuckled softly. Max kicked himself for not having read the note.
Have you been ill, Father? You've lost...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?